the United States cannot produce enough artillery shells to supply Ukraine for a month of operations, much less a year, whereas Russia does. Russia has outmanned Ukraine and shut down 60% of Ukraine's electrical production, with the United States Patriot missile only able to intercept 6%. This kind of delusional crap out of people like Hegseth, who just display their ignorance in a very profound way and want to talk tough and, oh man, we're gonna show you guys. Hey, Pete, you guys couldn't stop the Houthis, all right? So stop talking about like you're going to stop the Russians. You go take care of the Houthis first, then maybe you'll have something to talk about. I mean, it's just irritates the dickens out of me. Sorry.
I see that. Yeah, because it's such brash and I mean, super confident talk. And when you look at the wreckage behind, I mean, we can start with the Houthis, but we can certainly pivot right over to Afghanistan, which I participated in and saw firsthand after two full decades of really disastrous strategic leadership, which led to the tactical failure and the failure of the war, which we lost to the Taliban. They were knocked out of power in 2001, and they retained power and took out after we left. So no matter how you want to write it down, we lost that war. And, you know, we still have the potential with another war with Iran in the Middle East. The issue in Hamas is still not even over. And yet we want to claim victory everywhere. But this continues on a theme, which I think we're starting to see more and more belligerent talk from the West, because I think that they believe that Russia is actually losing the war. Now, I think you and I have talked about this before, maybe a month or so ago, maybe a little bit more than that. We had Keith Kellogg come on and say, Russia is not winning this war. I mean, if they were, they would have already taken Kiev. They would have already done this. They would have already done that. And they're only taking this stuff. So they're not winning. That was kind of what started this kind of deal. And then we have President Trump issuing that Truth Social 3 or 4 weeks ago, that I have now discovered that Ukraine can go back to the 1991 borders and win everything, et cetera. He's going on like that. And then we have, I guess it was published yesterday, in the Atlantic, we have the latest iteration of this, that Putin is not winning. And so he, I'm going to go over three things that I pulled out of this, kind of get your view to. But this is what's passing for elite Western thinking. And I think what undergirds these kinds of really boisterous, in your face comments from the United States, especially from Hegseth there. Overestimating Putin's power means doing his job for him, the author writes. It means amplifying every one of his threats, mistaking posturing for reality, and making policy decisions based not on facts, but on what Putin wants you to believe. And although he has had some success, Crimea being one, Putin's biggest win comes from convincing the world that he's winning even when he isn't. So that's just categorically mentioned at the front that Putin's not winning. What do you think leads to people to write stuff like this?
Drugs, heavy doses of mescaline, I guess. Spending too much time, you know, puffing on marijuana. I mean, it's completely delusional nonsense. Number one, Putin doesn't control the military campaign of Russia. That's controlled by the Russian general staff. And Putin at times will try to put some brakes on them. Look, they wanted to crush Ukraine's power system a year ago. And Putin said, no, let's give this talks with the U.S. a chance to work. General Staff said, okay. Now Putin's going back to us. Okay, guys, you were right. Have at it. They've taken out upwards of 70% of the hydroelectric power, the thermal power, the nuclear power, coal-fired power in Ukraine. Those folks are going to have a tough, tough winter. They're not going to be able to sustain operations. The fact that on a daily basis, the Russians now are capturing territory up and down the line of contact that extends from Kharkiv in the north to Zaporizhia in the south, and that the Ukrainians have no answer for it. So, but they're also, the Western meme has been that, oh, Russia, oh my God, the Ukraine has destroyed so many oil refineries. Russia They've got oil shortages, gas shortages. There are lines. I was stuck in a 30-minute traffic jam today, and it was not outside a gas station. We were heading into downtown Moscow, and I asked the driver, a guy named Pavel, who actually is also he's a sushi chef, of all things. I said, how's the gas shortage going? And he goes, gas shortage? What are you talking about? I said, well, it's all over the West, and you guys are short of gas. He goes, that's crazy. That's ridiculous. I said, what about inflation? He goes, oh, man, the Russian economy is being savaged with inflation. He goes, it's less than it was a year ago. He said, fact of the matter is our wages have gone up, not down. So, but he did say, when's this war in Ukraine going to end? And I said, I think it's going to end soon. I don't think it's going to be able to be sustained, despite all this bluster and happy talk from the West. But the notion that the Russians, see, this is what the West wants to personalize this. They want to make it, this is about Putin. If we just beat Putin, my God, then our problems will be over. Have they met Dmitry Medvedev? Dmitry Medvedev is the number two or three guy in the Russian government right now. He's known for having a little more, less temperate approach to some of these matters. And there is, just watching the brief time I've had to watch the Russian media is spreading a message that the United States is intent on attacking Russia. They take that personally, just the same way we in America would take it if Russia was going to attack us. And if Donald Trump crosses that line, there are going to be consequences for the American people. And Pete Hegseth and the clown show that is the Trump administration are not going to be able to do a damn thing to stop it. Because right now, they can't even stop the missile and drone attacks in Ukraine. As they admitted the other day, Ukrainian sources, not Russian sources, they are only stopping 6% of what Russia's firing. The Patriot missiles are that ineffective.
Well, that leads to the next point, or maybe contradictory point from this Atlantic piece here, because again, this is passing for elite thinking in the West. So when people see the Atlantic, it's regarded as an authoritative source. The second part he says here is that today Russia's armed forces are bogged down. There are no tanks rolling towards Kiev, no lightning offensive season regions, no major cities under siege. Russia does not have air supremacy or even superiority, a highlight of that for a reason, in Ukraine. Putin has made his objectives painfully clear, which he has. I'm not sure this description is accurate. Following that, he says, but far from seizing all of Ukraine, Russia has not even fully conquered the region that he has written into its constitutions. First of all, what do you make? Let's take those one after a time. What about that the Russian armed forces are now bogged down on the front?
Yeah, it's a lie. I mean, just read even the Ukrainian briefs on this. I'm at a loss for words, because here we, the United States, we were embroiled in Afghanistan for 20 plus years. What the hell did we have to show for it at the end of that? We were running for the damn airplanes to get the hell out of there, leaving all the equipment behind. Let's transition and look at Ukraine. What's going on? The Russians, even over the last 3 years, have made slow but steady progress in retaking parts of the Ukraine that were heavily, heavily fortified by a NATO equivalent army. Hell, we in the United States couldn't defeat a bunch of goddamn goat herders in Afghanistan. They weren't with tanks and artillery and heavily fortified positions and NATO intelligence backing them up. And yet, despite we having all those advantages, we failed in Afghanistan. Failed. Here's Russia fighting an army that is a NATO equivalent. They've got NATO tanks, NATO artillery, NATO mortars, NATO drones, NATO missiles. They've got NATO intelligence. And with all of that, Russia continues to move forward. You know, 2 years ago, it was Bakhmut. A year ago, it was Avdiivka. Now it's not only Pokrovsk, but it's a whole list of settlements, villages, cities that are falling under the control of the Russians, up to and including Kharkiv and Zaporizhia. So this kind of carping out of the West, frankly, I find it's disgraceful, it's sickening, it's misleading, it's dishonest across the board. You know, it'd be one thing if we could strut around and say, man, we kicked some Taliban ass, we did. How about those Houthis, man? They are holding up in a fetal position, crying, telling us to stop. None of that's true. It's just the opposite. We're the ones that said, okay, we win. We're out of here. Let's go, guys. Exit stage left. And then you get this kind of crap out of the Atlantic. I mean, it's ridiculous. And because people believe it, they say, oh, man, we still got a chance. There's still hope. The Russians are losing. The Russians are not losing. That's the point. If you start with false assumptions, if you believe that if you're like me, a 70-year-old fat guy that you can get in the ring and box Mike Tyson and beat him, you deserve what happens to you.
Gary, if you can pull that second one back up again, I want to move on to. I want to go back to that one. The second thing he says that the Russian does not have air supremacy or even air superiority in Ukraine. I'm not sure that there's a lot of substance behind that one. What do you think in terms of the front line, especially in glide bombs and in airstrikes along the line of contact?
All we got to do is go back over the last 6 weeks. Every week of the last 6 weeks. Well, we've had. What is going on? Is there somebody talking?
I'm here. Not sure. I hear something in the background. I'm not sure where it's from.
Yeah, I don't know where that's coming from. Over the course of the last 6 weeks, we've seen the Russians launching upwards of 700, 800 drones, missile strikes, and the Ukrainians have no answer for them. So, you know, what are they going to do? It's just, you know, where is that coming from?
Larry, check your computer somewhere, because it's not on our end. It's not on Danny's end either.
I'm looking at my computer here. I don't.
Okay.
Sounds like something's playing by mistake.
Also, X, yes. What is it? Rick Sanchez TV.
I got Rick Sanchez's voice rolling here.
Yeah, I don't have anything on my computer playing, so hopefully it's...
I'm sitting here on StreamYard.
We did not invite him to the show. We did not. Was he on the list, the email that you sent out, Danny?
I didn't send it out. So
did he sneak into your email, Danny?
You know what? I don't know, actually. But I'd like to get him off the list there. I mean, this is invite only, so...
All right.
Hopefully we can get that silenced here pretty quick.
I'm trying to figure out. I have no idea where it's coming from.
No other tabs open, I guess.
I guess. Okay, well. All right. We've got to stop.
Okay.
Beautiful.
He just finished off. All right. So that's the case in the air. And it's really hard to refute those overwhelming strikes near and to then say that they don't even have air superiority. Much less air supremacy. That's just factually inaccurate. Yet that's what is being tossed around here.
They're striking at will. I mean, there's no doubt about that. And you know, because the Russians, despite Western mythology, which says that the Russians want to do human wave attacks, they have no, because they lost a tremendous number of soldiers in World War II. And you can make the case that Stalin and the general and the Stavka back then didn't have a high regard for minimizing casualties. That's not the case with the current general staff. Current general staff has been one on a rampage about minimizing casualties. And so that's why we've seen actually such a low, you know, we keep getting these numbers that, oh, a million Russians have been killed.
Yeah,
no,
yeah, yeah.
That's, It's not true. It's not true simply from a very a factual standpoint. The Russians are firing 8 to 10 times the number of artillery shells that the Ukrainians are. So if the Ukrainians, by firing X amount, are causing Z amount of casualties in Russia, then Russia, by firing 8 to 10 times that, is going to cause 8 to 10 times the casualties, just from a logical standpoint.
Yeah.
Similarly, if they're launching 10 to 20 times the number of drones, 10 to 30 times the number of glide bombs, 10 to 40 times the number of missiles, there's no way in hell that Ukraine's inflicting the number of casualties the West is saying without acknowledging or admitting that Russia is causing magnitudes more casualties on the Ukrainians. It's just, it doesn't make sense.
Right. Yeah, that's exactly what they continue to say. Then Gary, if we could pull up number three on that Atlantic piece, because he says, if the Americans had a more clear-eyed view, so instead of seeing the things that you're talking about that are practically and verifiably true on the ground, he says that they would see a dictator who has bet everything on a failed invasion, a country losing its sphere of influence, an economy that's rapidly cooling. You mentioned that a second ago, that you have eyes on that one yourself. And a realistic view of his power would strip Putin of his greatest leverage, the perception of his invincibility. So what do you have to say about that in terms of having bet everything on a failed invasion?
Well, so let me tell you about the cooling economy. So Judge Napolitano and I, about 2 hours ago, were sitting in this Italian restaurant, and we just had a great meal, and we just ordered dessert. Now, we're sitting at the two of us at a table for four. The waiter in the office and the restaurant manager come over to us and said, "Gentlemen, excuse us. Would you mind moving to this other table for dessert? Dessert is on us, so you don't have to pay for the dessert." I said, "Judge, let's go." So, because they had more people coming into the restaurant that they wanted to put at our four table. Yeah, that economy's cooling, man. People can barely afford to get into the restaurant. I mean, it's so nonsensical. It is. Moscow is a city of 17 million people, and it operates. It's clean. It's safe. You don't see police on every corner. People go about their business. They're not queuing up. And so it's this nonsense that, oh, yeah, the Russian economy's queuing. Hey, America, look in the mirror. Pay attention to yourself. Fix your own problems before you think you need to go out around the damn world trying to tell other people how to live. Take care of your fentanyl crisis. Take care of your homeless crisis. Take care of your unemployment crisis. Right now in America, we got 4.6% unemployed. In Russia, 2.3%. America, you've got no place to lecture anybody about anything other than, you know what, we need a 12-step program so we fix ourselves.
And by the way, on that regard, I saw the, I think it was out earlier today, I may get the exact number off, but it was something like the Russian the economy has about, I think, 23% debt to its GDP ratio, whereas the United States has whatever it is, 30-something trillion today, and it's over 100%.
127%.
127% vice 23%.
Russia's 20%.
And apparently the 20% is about to fold, so make that work for me. But listen, the bottom line to all this is just continuing an onslaught to where at the elite level, at the elite mainstream media level, everything is being bombarded for everyone to hear and read that Russia is a paper tiger. Trump used that phrase himself. That it's a failed invasion, that they don't even have control in the air, et cetera. All these claims. And then that seems to inform President Trump. Now, whether he's saying it or is influenced by it is debatable. We can see which it is. But when he's considering policy options which could have catastrophic results, we need to pay a lot of attention. And one of those is about this Tomahawk issue. Now, one of those people that's speaking into Trump's ear is Brother Jack Keane, who said that it not only should he give those Tomahawks to Ukraine, he had a very specific target list in suggestion.
Putin began to fire hypersonic ballistic missiles against Ukraine, largely civilian targets. He's been firing air-launched and sea-launched cruise missiles against civilian targets and energy infrastructure for the last 2+ years, in addition to those 500 to 600 drones a night that you're seeing there. He's the guy that escalated. All of his targets are largely civilian targets. If the Ukrainians get the Tomahawk missiles, what are they going to use them for? Their number one target will be the Abaluga Manufacturing Center for Shahed missiles built by Ukraine. 20,000 North Koreans are there at that manufacturing center, Brett. It's out of the range of everything they have right now. That'll be target one, but they'll all be military targets. Ukraine is not going to target civilian targets. And what Putin is trying to do with President Trump is the same thing he successfully did with Biden. Threaten escalation if you do X. And there'll be something to come against you as a result of it. And he won that bluff with Biden time and time again. I don't think he'll win it with President Trump.
Okay, several things I want to talk about there, but let's look at the most important one first. What would you think would happen? What would the Russians do if President Trump authorized, and by extension, meaning the United States military, fired Tomahawk cruise missiles and destroyed the Garand 2 facility deep in Russia?
First off, the Russians would use their air defense system to shoot those missiles down, number one. But then if in the event that it did hit and create some damage, Russia's going to retaliate against the suppliers of those. And it could potentially go against U.S. NATO bases in Romania and Poland. But, you know, let's start with the fact that Jack Keane doesn't even know how to properly pronounce what he's talking about. Shahad, Shahid, not Shahad. Minor point, but if you can't even properly describe it, how the hell we even know that if you know what you're talking about? That's number one. Number two, get Andrei Martyanov. You know, you're going to have him on this week, I presume. Andre just did a piece the other day. He pointed out, he did the mathematics on it. To take out one of these Russian oil refineries, completely taken out, devastated, it's going to take 100 Tomahawk missiles. We don't have 100 Tomahawk missiles.
Yeah, I think we're the only thing that's been reported that Trump probably would authorize it, but somewhere between 20 and 4 or 50 total missiles.
Yeah, so we're to use an old technical scientific term, we're pissing in the wind, all right? It's just, this is all theater for domestic political consumption, because it doesn't change a thing militarily on the ground other than giving the Russians more reason to try to destroy and weaken us as much as they possibly can. And how that serves U.S. interests is beyond me. That, you know, Russia would like to be a friend of the United States. Russia is not an authoritarian country. It's not a communist country. It's a Christian country. It's a country that believes in traditional family values, something that is with at the heart of the MAGA group, the Make America Great Again folks. So Russia is a natural ally of the United States. And instead, we've got these warmongers like Keane and the Hodges and Petraeus, down the list that think it's in the best interest of the United States to see how far we can enrich the Lockheed Martins, the General Dynamics, the Raytheons, while the American people actually grow poorer and less rich.
And as a matter of fact, there's a meeting in Washington, D.C. today. By the way, this is Ukrainian media here. I think it's actually officially by the Ukrainian government. Where Andrei Yermak and head of the Ukrainian press corps are meeting with Raytheon and Lockheed Martin this day. And, they're continuing on this you know, this theme here where you're seeing on the screen where it's basically trying to like make it a movie trailer to glamorize it, et cetera. And all these smiles. Yeah, they're loving it, man. Let's get together with Raytheon and Lockheed Martin. We're getting in a situation where it is unclear if the Ukraine is going to even survive through the winter, either on the front line or at the home front with all this energy it's getting shot down like you're talking about. Right. And these guys are spending their time trying to have big contracts to make American contractors more rich. What do you make of it?
Yeah, look, this is this has nothing to do with any kind of strategy other than making these U.S.-based corporations rich and their shareholders rich. This is it's not going to bring peace to the world. We are supporting a regime that embraces Nazi ideology, that shuts down all opposition press, that just removed a mayor of Odessa to replace it with a military governor the other day. without following any kind of legal procedures. And yet that's who we're supporting. We're supporting people who actually embrace and celebrate Nazis. And we think that's fine. And then when the Russians react to that because they lost 27 million people to attacks by the Nazis in World War II, that they, you know, they tend to take this stuff kind of seriously. It is, you know, it just shows that the average American is so completely out of touch with reality. And to make it worse, our government leaders are even further out of touch.
Well, and that's kind of what I wanted to put. I have less or I have some more sympathy for many in America because they are deluged, unlike with channels like this or some of our colleagues in the industry, you know, who are also doing a great job telling the truth and having people on like you who also talk about what's happening on the truth. But when they see stuff like The Atlantic and when they see stuff on Fox, like with Jack Keane or any of these other guys or the president himself, they see a world that's like, no, we are the dominant power here and everybody else is quaking in their boots. And as a matter of fact, at this same meeting here, in my view, you had, and you're going to see it here in a second, both NATO leaders and the useful idiots in the media that are going to amplify this. Not only do we want to go after Russia, but we want to go after Russia and China simultaneously. Here's Mark Rutte, Secretary General, talking about expanding this alliance into a global military one.
Well, let's be absolutely clear on this. Australia and New Zealand and Japan and South Korea, the Republic of Korea, we've worked very closely together with them in NATO parlor, the IP4, the Indo-Pacific Four. And you know why? Because we acknowledge that the Euro-Atlantic and the Indo-Pacific cannot be seen as two separate theaters. They are combined with North Korea and China, supporting Russia's war effort, Iran supporting Russia's war effort. Let's not be naive about this. And we know that, as I said before, if China would do anything against Taiwan, most likely that Putin will be forced by Xi Jinping to move against NATO. So we have to stand ready. We have to work together. We have to train together. We have to procure together.
So let's not be naive here. I mean, everybody knows that if Xi Jinping decided to go to war against Taiwan, that he would force Vladimir Putin, whether he wanted to or not, to attack and to go into NATO. What say you, Larry Johnson?
Yeah, these are Western fantasies of declining economies. You know, I was watching, it's related. I was watching the Gaza peace plan signing the other day. And here you had all these subservient Europeans sitting behind Trump with not a single one of those European economies is economically growing at a rate above 2%. All are growing barely at 1%, some less than that. Every single one of those European economies has a massive debt structure. Meanwhile, there were six BRICS countries, either members or partners or people or affiliates, who were also at that meeting. Their economies are growing at a minimum in excess of 4% and above. So just from a matter of economic strength, the West is weak. Militarily, though, the West is also, you know, those NATO countries are also weak. They don't have, you know, England can barely field the total forces, like 70,000 guys. And of those, only maybe 20,000 are combat effective, could potentially be deployed forward. So you've got this fantasy world of Europe believing that they were something that they once were 80 years ago. They're no longer that. Meanwhile, Russia, China, India, Brazil, South Africa, Iran, Indonesia, the countries, the BRICS countries are growing. And despite, you know, Donald Trump today said, oh, the people are leaving BRICS. That's a lie. He is absolutely gaslighting people. It's not true. It's just the truth is opposite. India last week, the week before last, started buying, they're buying the Russian oil. They're paying for it with Chinese currency. Okay? They're not paying for it with U.S. dollars. They basically said, okay, we're ignoring the U.S. dollar. We're going to pay for it with Chinese currency. And then, I mean, this absurd theater that Trump is putting on. I got this great Gaza peace deal. It's like going to a wedding. The preacher's up there saying, this was the greatest wedding of all time. And you're in the audience going, why weren't the bride and groom up there? Okay? We didn't see Hamas and Israel together. Yeah. They didn't show up at the peace deal.
Yeah, I noticed that.
You know, celebrating a wedding. Yay, we had a great wedding. We didn't have a bride and groom, but by it, it was a blast.
Cake was good.
That's called delusional thinking. And the fact that there's so much of the media and so many of the politicians celebrating this nonsense. And it's like, guys, you know, there'd be reason for hope. At least we saw with Bill Clinton when you had Yitzhak Rabin sitting there with Anwar Sadat shaking hands. Okay, we had a bride and groom. At least it was real. And what happened out of that? Bibi Netanyahu helped kill Rabin. Okay? Kill Rabin to stop the peace process. And the Muslim Brotherhood killed Anwar Sadat to stop the peace process. Now we're faced with these Europeans sitting there nodding like a bunch of bobblehead dolls at Donald Trump's, this is a great agreement. I'm going to sign it here. Hey, we got peace, 3,000 years of peace. And you're going, where's the bride and groom, dude? Where's the bride and groom?
Yeah, doesn't live a lot of optimism even for that situation here. But then this is exacerbated because you have, again, General Keane given some of these same theories here about adding China into the mix.
Geopolitically, with a win like we saw in the Middle East for President Trump, does that affect Russia? Does that affect China and how they look at things?
Oh, absolutely. Just as weakness affects them. The fact that they become so aggressive during the previous administration is because they believe the American leadership was weak and they could take advantage of it. And the facts spoke to that as well. The attack that President Trump ordered on the nuclear sites, the decisive blow, got their attention.
And in Iran.
Yeah, in Iran. And what is happening right here now with the somewhat defeat of Iran and the proxies and moving forward to peace and stability in the region, all engineered by who? American leadership on a world stage setting the whole standard for what's to be accomplished. This is what they're trying to depose. They want to have that influence. And here we have a president doing it. You betcha they're paying attention.
Yeah, they are paying attention, all right. And when you, I had to watch that one a couple of times. You are actually making the case that China and Russia, nuclear superpowers, economic superpowers, especially the Chinese side, and that they are afraid of the United States because what happened to Hamas. It's hard for me to think that that's actually what he said. What do you make of it?
Yeah, look, they create this narrative, and then there's the reality. Reality number one, Hamas has not agreed to disarm. Hamas is not going to disarm. Israel has not agreed to accept a two-state solution and to accept Palestinian authority over Gaza. Ergo, there's no agreement for phase two. There's just the opposite. There's disagreement. The United States has attempted to bully China. And China finally turned around and said, okay, we're not going to take it anymore. They said, forget about the rare earths. You're not getting any more of those. And we, the United States, while it's not a significant portion of our economy in terms of dollar value, it's heavily significant in the military industrial complex for being able to produce certain weapon systems. And without that, we can't do it. And we do not have an alternative. It's not like we can go out and buy it from somebody else. There's nobody else to buy from. We tried to pressure China in the past because China was, up to a point, heavily dependent upon helium purchases from us. Chinese turned around and said, hey, we can't be that dependent. They separated themselves. Now they're only like 5% dependent on the United States. The United States started to impose fees on Chinese ships that dock the U.S. harbors. China said, fine, we're doing the same thing to you. The reality is the United States cannot compete economically with China. We're not big enough. We're not strong enough. We're not deep enough. And people say, oh, you hate Americans. Say, I'm just telling you the reality of the way it is. You want to go on with your dream world? Go on with your dream world. China is somebody that we ought to be friends with, not enemies. But part of that friendship has got to be based upon mutual respect. We said, oh, we're going to prevent you from buying chips. They said, okay, we'll develop our own. And they're getting the workarounds right now. You listen to some of the U.S. car manufacturers, the head of Ford. They went over to China and saw what the Chinese were doing in terms of using robots to build automobiles. And he came back and said, we can't compete. We, the United States, cannot compete anymore with China. They're so far ahead of us, were his words. And yet here we are looking to try to resolve things militarily when the only thing it's going to do is get some more of our middle class kids killed, where none of the children of the elite. You don't even see Jared Kushner out there on the front line. No, no. He's on the front line of making some money for the family.
Yeah.
You don't see Eric Trump out there on the front line. You know, they're too busy doing important things to make money. They want the kids from the working class families to go out there and sacrifice themselves. And then when they wind up paraplegic or quadriplegic or missing arms or with traumatic brain injury, they'll say, oh, that's too bad. Hopefully one of these private charities will take care of you, because we, the government, are not, which is the reality.
You know, I want to circle back around to Hexeth, where we started all this, because whether we think that it's nonsensical or not, this is the Secretary of, well, now war, they call it, defense. It's certainly not defense, I guess. And he clearly has the ear of President Trump. So when you look at what may come next and what we may do, these things seem to kind of mutually reinforce each other in quite a negative way. And I'd like you to, as we watch this last clip here, just kind of give us the best estimate you can of how this is going to be received in Russia and what they may do as a result of this, because Hegseth here is talking about an incredible signal he's going to send to Moscow.
As a result, NATO allies have committed more than $2 billion in security assistance to Ukraine through the NATO Pearl Initiative since August. Now, allies often say that Ukraine's security is synonymous with European security. Well, now, then, therefore, is the time for all NATO countries to turn words into action in the form of Pearl investments. All countries around this table, no free riders. And I certainly appreciate Secretary Ruta's leadership in this important effort, and all the nations today that we've heard step up. Many more commitments just today to that Pearl Initiative, which sends an incredible signal to the world about the commitment.
What kind of signals do you think that is going to be received or interpreted on the Russian side?
The Russians are just going to laugh. because it's just words. It's talk. It's not action. And even if they, let's say that goes to action, that they're going to actually invest the money to start creating, to build these weapon systems. They're not building modern weapon systems that match what Russia has. The West doesn't have a single weapon platform that can match the Iskander or the Kinzhal or
the Oreshnik, I would guess.
The Oreshnik as well. Yeah, you know, so we're not even in the same league. We're struggling to right now. What was the Ruta said? Russia builds in 3 months the number of artillery shells that we take to build in a year. So talk is great. Let's see what they actually do. And when it comes to doing, it's not just having a will. It's actually you've got the infrastructure, the technology. Part of the problem we're seeing right now with Germany in particular, their energy deficit. And it's not much better either in France or in England. So the three countries that used to be sort of the anchor of NATO in terms of the big economies and the industrial capability, they've been hollowed out. And you don't turn that around in a year or 2 years. And the United States is frankly not much better. You know, look, we can provide 20 to 50 Tomahawks. Ukraine, you're shooting upwards of 1,000 Patriots missiles in one night, and we can only build 550 Patriot missiles a year. How does that work?
What does that tell you?
Yeah. THAAD missiles? Oh, we built 50 of those. $13 million a pop, though. They're really a good value for the people invested in Raytheon. Yeah, I mean, it's so ridiculous. And that people like Hegseth sit there and say this with a straight face.
Yeah, I think that most of the intended audience there is, I don't think it's even Russia per se. I think it's more in the United States to keep the support going, because the Raytheons and all those folks are just relishing this that's going on right now at the AUSA conference here in Washington right now. It's a very veritable smorgasbord for all the weapons arms. I had somebody who was actually attending that send me a note earlier today, just that it made them sick because they're presenting all of these ammunition, all this weapon systems, whatever, like you're going to the mall. And you're looking at some of the higher end stuff. He said even like some of the displays look like the jewelry store. And he actually sent me a photograph of that. And he said that's just how glorified all this stuff is. And of course you're talking billions and billions of dollars, and that's why they do these things. And that's great for them, Larry. But it's not good. The country itself doesn't really benefit from any of this stuff. We're not any safer. In fact, you can argue we're less safe because we make other people think we may use it against them, so it raises their level of defense even higher. And then all it does is keep the war going over here. So what's the value of this? I mean, is it literally just, I'm talking about among the elite, is it just that, hey, works for us, so we'll just keep doing it however many Ukraine people died to keep that war going? We don't care.
Self-licking ice cream cone. You know, we build it. You know, if we build it, they will come. Well, we build it, and then, you know, we're the ones coming to it and spending the money on it. You know, you look at our use, the entire concept of how we use military force without having any strategy attached to it. And we're seeing that right now in the waters off the coast of Venezuela, where we're attacking and blowing up unarmed boats that are not firing on us. They're not trying to kill Americans, at least directly. They've got the allegation that they're carrying drugs, but the boats are incapable of reaching the United States without having four or five major refuelings if they're ever able to make it. And yet we find it so much easier. Let's just kill them. Let's just use violence and force.
Yeah, that'll, and by the way, I saw in the latest, that was announced yesterday, apparently the idea is it's probably more likely from Colombia. And in terms of what the people that were reported in the newspapers as having revealed that. They said that intelligence indicates that it was probably somebody from Colombia, meaning that despite what's claimed, we don't know who we blew. Yeah. We're just killing people. And nobody even gives it a second thought. It's just like, we don't know who they are, and they're apparently bad guys, so what does it really matter? And there's nothing that shreds international law anyway, and it just goes down the path of dehumanizing people and shredding the rule of law, which makes it easier and easier to do more stuff. Are you concerned about that?
Oh, absolutely. Look, the reality is this. If we had accurate, precise intelligence saying, you know what? We just learned that Danny Davis is pulling out of Buenaventura, Colombia, in a Boston whaler, that he's got 60 kilos of cocaine on board his ship, it's a boat, not a ship. If we got that kind of precise information, we'd know where to go capture you, take you into custody, take the drugs away from you, so that we make, and then we'd find out, give Danny a chance to become a cooperator. Danny.
Exactly.
How would you like to play for Team America? Either you can go to prison for a real long time and you're going to have a boyfriend named Bubba, or, you know, you can work with us and you can let us know who's up your food chain. If we had that kind of intelligence, that's what we would do. The fact that we don't have that kind of intelligence, well, we believe. Yeah, you know, well, I believed I was going to win the Powerball last week, and that didn't happen. Okay, but I believed it. So what we're faced with here is this, and this, look, this goes back 25 years when, you know, I know one of the guys that was responsible for drafting the authorization for the use of military force. You know, the doctrine that began, that basically gave the president free will to go out and kill people, that AUMF. And so the AUMF is right now being applied for killing people that are driving around in boats that we think might have drugs, but we don't have proof that they have drugs. But let me put it this way. Even if we had proof that they had drugs, then we should capture them, take them into custody, confiscate, destroy the drugs at that point, but take apart the network in a way, instead of just, well, we can kill you and eliminate you. That's not a country governed by law. That's lawless.
Right. And that also changes the nature of our leaders, because now then we're getting comfortable killing people. We don't want to waste the time or go to the difficulty, the hard work to actually do law enforcement stuff, to capture the guys, to do interrogations, to follow it up, etc., to actually get at the problem. No, we're cool with just kill them. So when you lower the mental threshold of how easy it is to order someone's death, that is a very dark and dangerous place and can go places we never intended or want. And that is one of the things that keeps me up at night, that I worry about as well.
Let's be clear. It really got started in earnest under George W. Bush, continued with Barack Obama,
who absolutely, ordered the death
of Anwar al-Awlaki, an American citizen, and his son, without any due process. You know, we think the terrorists, we don't like what they're saying, we're going to kill them. And so when you have such an utter disregard for human life, it's easy to treat these other human beings as garbage that you can throw out whenever you want to. So and we see an extension of that in our policy with respect to Ukraine, and definitely with our policy with respect to the genocide in Gaza.
Right. Yeah. That's my problem. And now that you see the scale, you mentioned it from the Bush and then to Obama, he grew it a lot. And then now that you see it's continued on, Biden did his stuff as well. And now then you see it, it's like economies of scale almost. And God only knows where this can go. So this is something we get a hold of. Well, listen, I really appreciate you coming on today, especially taking time out of your trip there to Moscow. And, Again, just show me that shirt one more time, just so I can,
yeah,
before I get off.
There we go.
There we go. All right, good.
I should have worn it, but I'm giving it to Professor Morandi, so it's clean. Clean.
I'm sure he'll appreciate that. I'm sure he will. Yeah. And give him our regards when you talk to him next, as well as the judge. Tell him we said hey.
Okay, we'll do. Thanks, Danny.
We appreciate you guys. And be sure and like and subscribe if you haven't, folks. And as a reminder, we are on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podcast Addict. Make sure you let your friends know who maybe prefer to get their information via podcast. I know a lot of people don't have time for the videos, but they love the podcast or the written word. DanielDavisDeepDive.substack.com. We've got it all for you. Just sign up and get whatever you like so you can even see it. Well, there's Larry the shirt. He has the shirt on there, so that makes us feel even better. But you can get that on all of our products. Whatever you need, we got a way for you to get the truth because we are unintimidated and uncompromised to bring you the truth, which you deserve, and we just want you to help us share it around to everybody else. Thank you very much, folks, and we'll see you tomorrow on the Daniel Davis Deep Dive.